Moya Teklu is the Executive Director and General Counsel of the Black Legal Action Center, and she joins me on Toronto Today. Moya, it's Greg Brady. Thanks for making the time to talk with me this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell me why this was I wouldn't even say important, but urgent in some cases for Black students in Ontario schools.
Yeah. So, you know, we've known about the problems that have existed in school systems for, I would say, decades. Higher rates of suspensions and expulsions for sort of vague reasons, disproportionate or higher rates of streaming into non-academic courses, and then, you know, incidents like the ones that you just described, incidents of harassment and bullying by not only classmates, but also teachers and other staff in the schools. We have at the Black Legal Action Center been delivering legal services in the area of education law since we opened our doors in 2019. But the community organizations that we've partnered with raised as an issue the fact that we have a very low financial eligibility threshold, and that a lot of families needed our help, but they made too much money for our services, but not enough money to hire somebody on their own. And so that's really what prompted this. We wanted it to align with the beginning of the school year to make sure that families across the province know that these resources are available to them.
What would be a sample example of somebody coming to the BLAC and saying, I want to know what our family, just a family scenario, what would be a sample example of somebody coming to you and saying, what should we do about this particular situation in my kid's school?
You know, a common example might be, I didn't realize that my student had been placed in a non-academic stream. I wasn't consulted. The school didn't tell me that this was happening. I found out after the fact, and I'm worried that now my child isn't going to be able to go to university. And I wasn't involved in this decision-making process, and I think I should have been. So what can I do? That's one example.
When I think about Toronto, so I look at the we were looking before the show at the at a racial demographic breakdown in Toronto. 31% of TDSB, this is high school specifically, 31% white, 23% South Asian, 17% East Asian, 12% Black. So there's, you know, I think those demographics have probably changed in the last, oh my goodness, decade, 15, 20 years. And at the same time, I think, you know, we think, well, schools are still a melting pot, but 12 out of 100 still is not, you're not even close to being on a level playing field and feeling like you're sort of just, you know, just part of the fabric. It should feel that way, but 12% is not as high as I think I thought it would be, and maybe some of our listeners thought it would be.
Yeah, and I mean, the representation in the student body is one thing, but the other things that we, you know, sort of need to look at is, what are the percentages of the suspensions and expulsions? So you mentioned 12% in the TDSB, mm-hmm. But Black students make up 33% of the students that are being suspended and expelled, even though they make up only 12% or 11% of the student body. You know, the issue of diversity and representation at among teachers has been a longstanding issue, and one that academics in this area have been highlighting for a really long time as well. When students are not seeing themselves reflected in the people that are teaching them or in the course materials, those also have, those are sort of broader issues, not the ones that we would deal with in terms of direct client service, but in terms of more systemic issues that that we and others have been looking at in terms of, you know, what do Black students need in order to succeed, other than to be treated, you know, in a non-discriminatory way. It's also sort of larger scale reflection in the curriculum, right? So the achievements of Black people throughout Canadian history, the role of Black people, the important role that Black people have played in Canadian history. And I don't just mean the existence of slavery and all of that other, you know, those things, but Black loyalists and settlers and all of those things that we really just don't pay any attention to. And that's not really the focus of this specific program, but it all is sort of part of the same issue, which is that there are factors at play that push Black students out of the school system. Mm-hmm. We are doing what we can to bring them back in.
Moya Teklu's kind enough to join us, Executive Director and General Counsel of the Black Legal Action Center. Look, everything the last 2 years has sort of, you know, we've held up a mirror to ourselves, and the pandemic has exacerbated some issues that probably existed already. But I would bet that the lack of extracurriculars, the arts, sports, field trips has not helped. Has not helped in this department. It hasn't helped keep kids busy. It hasn't helped keep kids thriving and active. The on again, off again, online learning, a big factor as well. We're all hoping for normalcy this year. Not to say these issues won't exist this school year or the next year or the next year, but I'd bet you the last 2.5 years haven't been helpful. And if anything, they've amplified some of these problems.
So it's interesting because, you know, I mentioned that these are longstanding issues, right? They're issues that we've been aware of for decades. And so the pandemic, what it's done is really brought to light and brought to the surface the inequities that have existed for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But I think, and I, you know, please, I have to sort of fact check this, but I think there have been some studies that have shown that actually not being in the classroom has had a positive impact on the achievement of Black students, and reading rates have increased, and discipline has decreased, and all of those things. So I have to go back and see the specific source. I know I was reading some news reports on that, but that's to say that the pandemic, you know, has caused a number of issues, and we keep seeing studies coming out about higher rates of infection and mortality and things like that in terms of COVID in Black and other racialized communities. I'm not so sure what impact it has had on the school system other than, you know, the sort of common sense things that we think in terms of isolation.
I'm glad you brought that up. It is interesting. I think as you say that, I'm like, it's probably very difficult to get disciplined of like, what is there, if you're not paying attention in an online class, I suppose the teacher can kind of ignore a student, whereas doesn't matter the you know, the ethnic background or the color of a student's skin. If a student's being disruptive, they're going to kick them out of the class. There's probably, put it bluntly, there's less ways to get in trouble when you're not in the hallway, not in the cafeteria, not, you know, at a, you know, in a gym class and a shoving match breaks out. But I think about all kids, and I think, I'm sure there's been a struggle. I've witnessed it in my own household where I know extracurriculars and field trips and whatnot, just they're part of what makes school worth going for is the extras. It's the, and you learn along the way, and you make mistakes along the way too.
Yeah. So as you're talking, I'm reminded also of sort of the other impact of COVID on students has been, you know, what's referred to as the digital divide, right? There was this over reliance on people using internet and having access to computers, and that's not necessarily true for, you know, particularly people who live with lower income and people who are in communities that don't have, you know, the greatest access to internet. So in that sense, there were some negative impacts as well. But I while you were talking, I did a quick Google search. And so
hey. That's okay. It keeps us both informed. That's good.
Yeah. So just that the TDSB data did show a rapid reading improvement in Black elementary students during the pandemic. So I wasn't.
That's so interesting. I never would have known that. That's good. That's good. Good nugget for our audience. Of course it is.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I got a minute left here, but also this is, you know, educators are, you know, they're so important to us, but I think they also, I think your group probably wants to hold them accountable, but they want to hold, I think 99% of them want to hold each other accountable and treat people equally and advocate equally as well. And you're right. I think representation, proportional representation matters. I know when I got to university, this whole new world opened up. And I grew up outside of London. And to be honest, almost exclusively white students, white teachers. You get to university, you've got a teacher that was born in the Middle East. You've got a teacher that was born in the, or a professor that was born in the Caribbean. Like it, but it shouldn't take going to university and paying university tuition to have that kind of experience and have that kind of opening and a sharing of culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Representation is important. And I do agree that the majority of educators, and not just educators, but people do not want to engage in racist or oppressive behavior. You know, the issue is, and this is sort of a buzzword as of late, is that a lot of people are not aware of the biases that they hold and how they manifest in their day-to-day behavior, right? So you don't realize that you're treating the Black student differently than the other students. You don't realize that you're watching them more closely, or that you're scrutinizing their work, you know, more heavily, or that when they act out in the way that children do, you know, whether they're speaking during a, you know, that's just what kids do, right? When they're engaging in childlike behavior, you don't realize that you're treating them like they shouldn't, like they are adults. So those are the kinds of things that the data and that the statistics demonstrate, but that individual people may not realize that they're engaged in. Yeah.
That's right. Moya, thanks so much for the chat. Let's catch up when school gets going in a few weeks' time and see how the organization is factoring into making a difference. I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful day.
I will. You too. Moya Teklu is Executive Director General Counsel of the Black Legal Action Center.